we're starting chapter 31 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, called Owls. Ron's euphoria at helping Gryffindor scrape the Quidditch Cup was such that he could not settle to anything.
Wait a minute.
The next day. Yes, my love.
You didn't finish the previous chapter.
Yes, I did.
No, I didn't.
Perhaps you didn't listen to it all the way through.
I thought I did. Wait, can you pause this one?
Sure. All right, we're continuing now. All he wanted to do was talk over the match, and Harry and Hermione found it very difficult to find an opening in which to mention Gromp. Not that either of them tried very hard. Neither was keen to be the one to bring Ron back to reality in quite such a brutal fashion. As it was another fine, warm day, they persuaded him to join them in studying under the beech tree on the edge of the lake, where they stood less chance of being overheard than in the common room. Ron was not particularly keen on the idea at first. He was thoroughly enjoying being patted on the back by Gryffindors walking past his chair, not to mention the occasional outbursts of Weasley is our king, but agreed after a while that some fresh air might do him good. They spread their books out in the shade of the beech tree.
Ron is so attention-thirsty.
I know he is. And sat down while Ron talked them through his first save of the match for what felt like the dozenth time. I mean, well, I'd already let that one in of Davies, so I wasn't feeling that confident, but I don't know. When Bradley came towards me, I just, out of nowhere, I thought, you can do this. And I had about a second to decide which way to fly, you know, because he looked like he was aiming for the right goal hoop. Obviously, my right, obviously, his left. But I had a funny feeling he was fainting, so I took the chance and flew left, his right, I mean. And, well, you saw what happened, he concluded modestly, sweeping his hair back quite unnecessarily so that it looked interestingly windswept. And glancing around.
Like Harry's dad.
Exactly. And glancing around to see whether the people nearest to them, a bunch of gossiping third-year Hufflepuffs, heard him. And then, when Chambers came at me about 5 minutes later, "What?" Ron said, stopping mid-sentence at the look on Harry's face. "Why are you grinning?" "I'm not," said Harry quickly, looking down at his transfiguration notes and attempting to straighten his face. The truth was that Ron had just reminded Harry forcibly of another Gryffindor Quidditch player who had once sat ruffling his hair under the very same tree. "I'm just glad we won, that's all." "Yeah," said Ron slowly, savoring the words. "We won. Did you see the look on Chang's face when Ginny got the snitch right out from under her nose?" See, what I don't understand is why they weren't carrying Ginny, right? Mm-hmm. Clearly she won the game. Mm-hmm. The Seeker always wins the game. And by always. And by always, I mean like 95% of the time. Anyways, "I suppose she cried, did she?" said Harry bitterly. "Well, yeah, more out of temper than anything, though," Ron frowned slightly. "But you saw her chuck her broom away when she got back to the ground, didn't you?" Said Harry. "Well, actually, no, Ron," said Hermione with a heavy sigh, putting down her books and looking at him apologetically. "As a matter of fact, the only bit of the match Harry and I saw was Davy's first goal." Ron's carefully ruffled hair seemed to wilt with disappointment. "You didn't watch?" he said faintly, looking from one to the other. "You didn't see me making any of those saves?" "Well, no," said Hermione, stretching out a placatory hand toward him. "But Ron, we didn't want to leave. We had to." "Yeah?" said Ron, whose face was growing rather red. "How come?" "It was Hagrid," said Harry. "He decided to tell us why he's been covered in injuries ever since he got back from the Giants. He wanted us to go into the forest with him. We had no choice. You know how he gets. Anyway." The story was told in 5 minutes, and by the end, Ron's indignation had been replaced by a look of total incredulity. "He brought back one and hid in the forest?" "Yep," said Harry grimly.
"No," said Ron. Funny.
"Yep." "No," said Ron, as though saying this he could make it untrue. "No, he can't have." "Well, he has," said Hermione firmly. "Gromp's about 16 feet tall, enjoys ripping up 20-foot pine trees, and knows me," she snorted, "as Hermy." Ron gave a nervous laugh.
"Do you need to blow your nose?"
"Yeah." Okay. Where were we again? Oh, yeah. Ron gave a nervous laugh. And Hagrid wants us to teach him English, yeah, said Harry. He's lost his mind, said Ron, in an almost awed voice. Yes, said Hermione irritably, turning a page of Intermediate Transfiguration and glaring at a series of diagrams showing an owl turning into a pair of opera glasses. Yes, I'm starting to think he has, but unfortunately, he made Harry and me promise. Well, you're just going to have to break your promise, that's all, said Ron firmly. I mean, come on, we've got exams. And we're about that far, he held up his hand to show thumb and forefinger about a millimeter apart, from being chucked out as it is. And anyway, remember Norbert...
Can you change your... Or blow your nose again?
It's not going to help.
Just try it again.
All right, you just want to hear me like this? Anyway, remember Norbert? Remember Aragog? Have we ever come off better from mixing with any of Hagrid's monster mates? I know, it's just that we promised, said Hermione in a small voice. Ron smoothed his hair flat again, looking perplexed. Well, he sighed. Hagrid hasn't been sacked yet, has he? He's hung on this long. Maybe we'll hang on till the end of the term, and we won't have to go near Grop at all. The castle grounds were gleaming in the sunlight, as though freshly painted. The cloudless sky smiled in itself, as the smoothly sparkling lake... In the smoothly sparkling lake, the satin-green lawns ripped occasionally in the gentle breeze. June had arrived, but to the 5th years this meant only one thing. Their owls were upon them at last. Their teachers were no longer setting their homework. Lessons were devoted to reviewing those topics the teachers thought most likely to come up in the exams. The purposeful, feverish atmosphere drove nearly everything but the owls from Harry's mind, though he did wonder occasionally during potions lessons whether Lupin had ever told Snape that he must continue giving Harry occlumency tuition. If he had, then Snape had ignored Lupin as thoroughly as he was now ignoring Harry. This suited Harry very well. He was quite busy, intense enough without extra classes with Snape to badger him. And to his relief, Hermione was much too preoccupied these days to badger him about occlumency. She was spending a lot of time muttering to herself, and had not laid on any elf clothes for days. She was not the only person acting oddly as the owls drew steadily nearer. Ernie McMillan had developed an irritating habit of interrogating people about their study habits. How many hours do you think you're doing a day? He demanded of Harry and Ron as they queued outside their biology. A manic gleam in his eyes. I don't know, said Ron. A few. More or less than 8. Less, I suppose, said Ron, looking slightly alarmed. I'm doing 8, said Ernie, puffing out his chest. 8 or 9. I'm getting an hour in before breakfast. 8's my average. I can do 10 on a good weekend day. I did 9.5 on Monday. Not so good on Tuesday, only 7.25. Then on Wednesday. Harry was deeply thankful that Professor Sprout had ushered them into the greenhouse there at that point, forcing Ernie to abandon his recital. Meanwhile, Draco had found a different way to induce panic. Of course, it's not what you know, he was heard to tell Crabbe and Goyle loudly outside potions a few days before the exams were to start. It's who you know. Now, Father's been very friendly with the head of the Wizarding Examinations Authority for years. Old Griselda Marchbanks. We've had around for dinner, everything. Do you think that's true? Hermione whispered to Harry and Ron, looking frightened. Nothing we can do if it is, said Ron gloomily. I don't think it's true, said Neville quietly from behind them. Because Griselda Marshbank's a friend of my grand's, and she's never mentioned the Malfoys. What's she like, Neville? Asked Hermione at once. Is she strict? A bit like Grand, really, said Neville in a subdued voice. Knowing her won't hurt your chances, will it? Ron told him encouragingly. Oh, I don't think it'll make any difference, said Neville, still more visibly. Grand's always telling Professor Marchbanks I'm not as good as my dad. Well, you saw what she's like at St. Mungo's. Neville looked fixedly at the floor. Harry, Ron, and Hermione glanced at one another, but didn't know what to say. It was the first time that Neville acknowledged that they had met at the Wizarding Hospital. Meanwhile, a flourishing black market trade to aid in concentration, mental agility, and wakefulness had sprung up among the 5th and 7th years. Harry and Ron were very much tempted by the bottle of Buraphio's brain elixir offered to them by Ravenclaw sixth year Eddie Carmichael, who swore it was solely responsible for the 9 outstanding owls he had gained the previous summer, and was offering the whole pint for mere 12 galleons. Ron assured Harry he would reimburse him for half the moment he left Hogwarts and got a job. But before they could close the deal, Hermione had confiscated the bottle from Carmichael and poured the contents down the toilet. "Hermione, we want to buy that," shouted Ron. "Don't be stupid," she snarled. "You may as well take Harold Dingle's powdered dragon claw and have done with it." "Dingle's got a powdered dragon claw?" said Ron eagerly. "Not anymore," said Hermione. "I confiscated that, too. None of these things actually work, you know." "Dragonclaw does work," said Ron. "It's supposed to be incredible. It really gives your brain a boost. You come all over cutting for a few hours." Wait, you come over all cutting for a few hours. I read that weirdly. "Hermione, let me have a pinch. Go on, it can't hurt." "This stuff can," said Hermione grimly. "I've had a look at it, and it's actually dried doxy droppings." This information took the edge off Harry and Ron's desire for brain stimulants. They received their examination schedules and details of the procedure for owls during their next transfiguration lesson. "As you can see," Professor McGonagall told the class while they copied down the dates and times of their exams from the blackboard, "your owls are spread over 2 successive weeks. You will sit in theory exams in the morning and practice in the afternoons. Your practical astronomy examination will, of course, take place at night. Now, I must warn you that the most stringent anti-cheating charms have been applied to your examination papers. Auto-insert quills are banned from the examination hall, as are remember-alls, detachable cribbing cuffs, and self-correcting ink. Every year, I'm afraid to say, seems to harbor at least one student who can think that he or she can get around the Wizarding Examination Authority's rules. I can only hope it is nobody in Gryffindor. Our new headmistress..." Professor McGonagall pronounced the word with the same look on her face that Aunt Petunia had said whenever she was contemplating a particularly stubborn bit of dirt. "Has asked the heads of house to tell their students that cheating will be punished most severely, because, of course, your examination results will reflect upon the headmistress's new regime at the school." Professor McGonagall gave a tiny sigh. Harry saw the nostrils of her sharp nose flare. "However, that is no reason not to do your best. You have your own futures to think about." "Please, Professor," said Hermione, her hand in the air, "when will we find out our results?" "An owl will be sent to you sometime in June," said Professor McGonagall. "Excellent," said Dean Thomas, in an audible whisper, "so we don't have to worry about it until the holidays." Harry imagined himself sitting in his bedroom in Primit Drive in 6 weeks' time, waiting for his owl results. Well, he thought, at least he would be sure of one bit of post next summer. Maybe we'll stop there. Mm-hmm. And hopefully by next time, I'll be able to read without sounding like I'm about to die. I love you, kid. Hey, Babu. Good job.